I thought we scored four good goals today from key players who need to be scoring for us. I keep saying that's still the area of the park where I just don't think we've got bang for our buck, considering how hard we work in that front third. I think even today, I thought we had more opportunities to score, but I was just really pleased in the execution of all our goals, and the players who got them is important for us. That's more important, because I think we can be a team that scores a lot of goals, but we're not, obviously we're still a work in progress in that area. So to get four goals, especially away from home, and the players who got them, more importantly, I thought, and the execution of them, I thought was really, really pleasing. The reason that I'm here is because, the club is seeking change.
He said, well, whether you come or not, you're going to see a completely different first team under me.
My hope and my desire and what I'm going to try and do is give our supporters hope and belief that we're going to embark on something special.
Welcome into the Tottenham Depot. I am your host, Andrew. You can follow me at Ace Stetka. You can follow us at Tottenham Depot. This is episode 169, and we are live on YouTube for the first time. So if you're joining us there, welcome. We are happy to be doing it. What a day we have selected to come in and do a live podcast to start us off. A lot to discuss, including some history for Tottenham Hotspur women who have just advanced to the FA Cup semifinal for the first time ever. We're going to get going on that, plus a big victory for the men as well. We'll start by throwing it out to Scott. He is at Scott G. Bird. Scott, what's going on with you, my friend?
Great sports today. Not quite the 10-0 combined route that I'd predicted, but the two victories, right, which are pleasing beyond the imagination when you consider our the gravity of the two opponents and matches today. So yeah, wonderful way to start the Sunday.
No question about it. Caroline is also with us at CG Stefco. I know Caroline is super jazzed about what we just witnessed at Brisbane Road. Kaz, how are you?
I'm still shaking a little bit, to be honest, after watching that penalty shootout. That was unreal. What a day to be a Spurs fan, basically. And let me just say real quick, there is some construction going on next door. So any noises, that's what it is.
Hey, we're doing it live, as Bill O'Reilly once said. I knew I'd get one Bill O'Reilly mention in here for only that purpose. And if you're listening on the podcast after, that's great as well. We love to have you there. But if you are here on YouTube, feel free to drop us a comment, like, subscribe to the channel. We're not going to do this every week, but when our schedules allow, I think we're going to try and do this a little bit more to let the viewers have a little bit more of an interactive feel with the show. You can comment in real time. We can throw it up on the screen. We can answer questions, comments, concerns, all of those types of things. Guys, let's start with what we just witnessed. we were going to lead off with a 4-0 victory for the men over Aston Villa, which we will get to, trust me, but Tottenham Hotspur women in penalties just knocked off Manchester City in the FA Cup quarterfinal to advance to the semifinals, first time ever, as I mentioned, and that's a really big deal. Like, it's a really, really cool result, Caroline, especially after the fact that Spurs had already played Manchester City three times this season and lost those games by a combined score of 10-0. All of that said, what is your reaction in real time? I know you said you were still shaking, but like, this is pretty monumental, a pretty monumental result for Spurs women.
Yeah, my initial reaction is just that we really turned things around in this game. I'll be honest, it was not the best first half from us, and I was not feeling too confident, especially after they were able to get that, the first goal. But then you have a player like Beth England, who not only is our captain, but we know is one of the best finishers in the league when she's in form. And I think she struggled for form coming back from her injury. But today, just seeing that pressure that she put on the Manchester City defense and keeper to get that goal, like, it just shows that she's a player who can get things done and leads by example. And I think getting that goal when we did, right at the death of, regular time, just really gave the team a boost to go into the extra time period and fight for it. And I feel like we had definitely, you know, the majority of the possession in that extra time period, the better chances. So it does feel like, you know, even though it's a win on penalties, it feels like as a whole, we did deserve to win this game.
Yeah, the Man City goal came very early in this match, and much of the match was played a goal down. But like you said, Beth England comes through, coming off the bench, scores one in stoppage time to equalize. And I really thought from halftime on, even when you consider the 30 minutes of extra time, Spurs went toe-to-toe with Man City. And it was not a performance that was, you know, low block and counter. I mean, there were a number of chances throughout that second half. And it was really, really impressive to see Spurs kind of come out of their shell a little bit and go after City at times. And chances were created. And look, you're only going to get so many of those to put away. But Scotty, what did you see from, especially from that second half when Spurs just kind of, I don't want to say took it to City, because it, like I said, it was a very 50-50 game. But that's not something we've seen in the previous three matches, right?
Not at all. I think initially I looked at the first 7-8 minutes, right, and their opening goal especially, and it felt a bit drab, it felt dreary, it felt like it could get out of hand pretty quickly. But I got to give a ton of credit to of course the squad, but Robert as well for you know, having a game plan and asking the team to stick to it, because on paper, I mean, let's call it what it is, right? On paper they're a better team than us, but We went out with a plan today, and as you said, that plan was to be brave and to play our brand of football, you know, Bobby ball, we could call it. I think it's still a work in progress, what we're calling it, right? But we stuck to the plan and did what the manager asked, and as you said, took the game to City. So I'm really proud of the team for the tactical approach itself, but I'm also really proud of the team for responding in the manner that they did after conceding such an early goal, because from a mentality perspective against that City team, when you concede in the fifth minute or whatever it was, good chance you fold after something like that happening in such a big match. And obviously the complete opposite of what happened, you know, us folding, especially in extra time. I know we'll get to it, but that second half of extra time, we had City pinned back the whole entire 15 minute period. We looked like the team that would go and win that match. And, you know, few would have expected that. So hats off to everybody, you know, substitutes, everybody that started, Robert himself, the whole organization. It's a big win.
Caroline, you mentioned, you didn't mention, you have Becky Spencer right there on your screen. Like, let's talk for a second about Becky Spencer, because there was a moment maybe 2 months ago where it looked like she had lost the starting goalkeeper job. She's been immaculate since then. I mean, it's been incredible. She's kind of slotted right back into the starting role. And not only was she great throughout the 120 minutes of regular time, but the penalty shootout, she was incredible.
She had some big saves in regular time as well. I think that's good to point out. Yeah. But the penalty shootout, I have to say, even I did not quite know that she had that in her. I think she, perhaps unfairly, we've kind of had this impression of her as not the strongest keeper for a penalty shootout, just because she's not the tallest keeper. We all know this. But she, I mean, she just really, I think, has a smart approach to the game. And you do see that show up kind of in her strong positioning, her ability to distribute the ball. And it came up in the penalties as well. You know, she really was able to read where those penalties were going. You know, one in one direction, one in the other. And we know that City have quality players, so it's not like she was getting softball penalties either. I'm just really proud of her, because I think it has been a tough season for her, not just this season, but honestly last season as well. And she had an incredible summer with Jamaica at the World Cup. And I think we were all hoping she could bring, you know, a little bit of that momentum into the season. And she's spoken about the fact that coming off that World Cup was a bit of a tough mental adjustment for her. And so I think we are now starting to see her get back to her best form. And it's not to say that, you know, Barbara Votikova couldn't be a good goalkeeper for us in the future. I do think, though, that Becky is really reclaiming her number one spot at this moment.
And then the other player I really want to shout out, and we mentioned her already, is Bethany England, because she did not start this match. She has been slowly coming back to form since the injury that was, you know, known about before the season even started. And we're now in the middle of March and she's finally starting to show a little bit of form, came off the bench in this game. How important is it, Caroline, for this captain to like kind of grab a hold now of the rest of this team? This, we're going to zoom out in a second and look at kind of a grander picture of what this team has done thus far, because I really do think this is a pretty monumental accomplishment, even though it's just a FA Cup semifinal. I mean, I don't want to brush that off, but they haven't won anything, but this is a pretty big moment in the terms of the growth of this team over this year. But Bethany England specifically has been there the whole way, even if she hasn't been there the whole way, if you know what I mean. What do you make of what she's brought to this club?
Yeah, I mean, we wouldn't be in this position, I don't think, if it weren't for Bethany saving us from relegation in the prior season. And it's, I think for that reason, she's got a lot of credit in the bank, and we've been able to be patient as she comes back from this injury, because we know she hasn't had the easiest time of it. And I think now we're about to see where she's going to take up, you know, some of the slack. And Martha Thomas, I think, really was a huge player for us in the first half of the season. And now she's kind of struggling to get back on the score sheet. So I think it's just going to be kind of a give and take with them. But you also just need Beth in there for her leadership. Like, you can see it in everything she does on the pitch, even in the way, you know, she was kind of trying to get the crowd, you know, riled up as we were about to go into extra time and then into penalties. I just think, like, the heart that she plays with is what really makes her special to the club, special to her teammates. And yeah, I think we're going to start to see the best of her from a performance aspect as well. You know, it's not that she had a perfect game today, even with getting that, you know, crucial equalizer. There were still a few times, I think she's kind of struggling a bit with headers since she's come back, and that used to be, you know, like her bread and butter. But I think it'll come back as she gets more minutes, because she hasn't been playing a lot either. That's the other thing we have to remember. You know, she was able to come in today when we needed her and make an impact. And I think that's just going to give her something to build off of now.
Scotty, I mentioned big picture. Like, Robert Villaham comes into this team and is trying to build something, obviously, off the back of fighting off relegation last season. And I feel like not only a first ever win over Arsenal, which happened in December, but, you know, it like just like growing the whole squad out. And now this, an FA Cup semifinal berth. What does it say about just the program being built from a, you know, more from a macro standpoint rather than a micro?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's still a lot of work to do. You know, we all know that there have been key players this year who are not permanent at this point, right? So as far as squad building goes, there's still a lot of work to do. But as far as the squad itself, I think it's all around mentality. I mean, play on the field's fine, right? It's all there. It's good attacking football, but this squad is becoming trained by Robert, his staff, whomever it is, right behind the scenes that we'll never know, but they're being built and groomed to just be mentality monsters and believe that they can win when on paper they maybe shouldn't, right, at this point. Again, not only today's match, but matches throughout the season. Even the last time we went out and didn't get the result against City, right, we showed that we believed we could. And after that, what was it, 7-0 the first time we played them, right, that absolute drumming to come back time and time again. And I think Caroline's talked about it. We've progressively played better and better each time we faced off against one of the best teams in the world in City. So, yeah, it's all mentality. It's all belief and togetherness that has put us in this position, but also to bring it back to the micro that allowed us to win the game today. Because as I said earlier, on paper, we were up against a better side, but we just kept playing our game. We kept believing. We stayed calm, right? There was no desire to run out of position to try to snag a goal and expose ourselves at the back. We just stayed super patient. And that's that belief that I talk about, just continuing to chip away and plug away and know deep down that something good could happen if you stick to the plan. So, yeah, just I think more, like I said, more than anything on the field itself, it's what's happening in between the ears and off the field that's so impressive right now.
Yeah, and you know, you were talking earlier, Scott, about how everybody made an impact, including substitutes, and I think that was really a big part of it. I admit I was a little skeptical about some of the choices that Robert made with those subs, you know, particularly taking Jess Naz off so early when I felt like she was the only real bright spot from the first half. But she's also been playing heavy minutes lately. And, you know, she's the kind of player that she's giving her all. So I don't know if she really realistically would have made it through to that penalty shootout. But I do think the subs that came in, quite a few of them, I think, showed that they really are competing for those starting spots. You know, we got a player like Wang Shuang who brings a creativity that kind of, with Drew Spence just coming back from injury in the last game, we've really kind of been missing that in the middle of the park. So I really enjoyed her performance, and, you know, especially in extra time, I felt like she was very dominant. And then Matilda Vinbear, you know, I think last episode we were talking about how she's kind of one for the future, but she showed us some stuff today that was just very exciting. And I think we're starting to bridge the gap between, you know, the squad depth of those top teams and us, where we haven't had that in the past. And I think it showed up kind of surprisingly in our fitness levels in that extra time period. It felt like we were the freshest team, even though they had their substitutes as well. So I think that really speaks to the improvement, not just of like the individuals in the squad, but also the work that like the trainers are doing behind the scenes to get them fit and be able to play these longer games. Because we know even in our league games, stoppage times are increasing. Like, teams have to be more fit now. So I just feel like we're actually able to compete in a way that we were not in seasons past, where if we had gotten to an extra time like this, I don't feel like we would have had the legs or the gas to get through it. So it was really refreshing to see us actually take that extra time and make it ours, and, you know, kind of put a stamp on it in terms of our style of play. Like, that was something very new for this team and very exciting.
Yeah, it's been a really remarkable turnaround into the hat for the semifinal, which is really, really cool. The other teams, Leicester, who is actually the next opponent in WSL play next weekend. And then I believe it's Chelsea and Manchester United. So we'll see what comes of that. But as I mentioned, next week for the women, it is a return to WSL play, and it's Leicester City, who sit just 3 points behind them in the table. Now, again, league positioning for this season, it's probably a moot point. There aren't enough games really to challenge for a European spot. There's also not enough games to worry about relegation like there was last year. But that growth that we continue to see will be nice. And now you've got a freaking cup to go take a run at. I mean, if you can get past two more opponents, you're going to be lifting a trophy, which would be one hell of an accomplishment. So it's really cool to see Robert Villaham's team put themselves in that position in his first season, and just to be able to do it with, like you said, Caroline, kind of this new style and this new, they're not taking anything from anyone. They're out there taking it to other teams, which is really, really great to see. Anything else you guys want to get off your chest about the women's team before we move on to talking about a 4-0 victory over Villa?
Yeah, I think we just double click on the penalty shootout itself quickly before we move on. I think, you know, we all know Becky Spencer was fantastic, and I put in the chat right before the shootout that I thought it maybe favored us to go to penalties because Becky was playing well, and set aside her you know, the overall opinion of her ability in a penalty shootout, I think there's a lot to learn still. But the fact that she was so confident today in extra time and the match itself, I think favored us. But beyond Becky, the penalty kicks themselves were fantastic. I mean, Bethany England to step up and drain the first one after City had missed, that's hard to do, right? To own that moment and put the team on your back right after City misses. We see a lot of people miss that penalty after their opponent missed the first one. So credit to her. Even Roz's penalty that was blocked was hit with a lot of pace and a lot of tenacity. I think it was just not high enough or low enough, right? Was the only criticism there. It was just kind of like chest high, which is where you never want to be, but it was hit with a lot of confidence. Nilden's penalty was unstoppable. Not a keeper on the planet stops that penalty. It was just absolute upper 90, just pure confidence. in that moment. And I can't give enough credit to the five kick takers today, again, including Roz, because they were well prepared, as was Becky, right?
Yeah, I think that's a really good shout about Amanda's penalty, because she was someone who you could see was visibly fatiguing in the last part of the extra time. So for her to come out and hit a penalty of that quality, I was like, okay, like, I see you, Amanda. You know, this is a player we have on loan and might want to be thinking about making into a permanent signing. So yeah, she's, like I said, all the, you know, the players, not just the kind of the newer transfers who started, but also some of the substitutes, like, they really made their mark on the team today. So I think just kudos to all of them.
No question about it. Kudos all around. Let's move on to talking about Aston Villa 0, Tottenham Hotspur 4, which is, I think, a result that on the surface looks almost way worse than it was because of the two late goals. But my goodness, this still, regardless of how you want to paint it, was an ass kicking. Scotty, coming into this match, I feel like there was a lot of talk about revenge for what Villa did to Spurs in the first match. Of course, that was only a couple of days or a couple of games after the Chelsea match, which we will forever reference as just the Chelsea match because of everything that happened in that game. But Matty Cash was, I know, kind of in the, you know, in the targets, and there was just a lot of, I think, bad blood boiling before this game. But Spurs came out and kind of did their normal bit in the first half and just had a lot of possession and a lot of, you know, not even chances, just a lot of ball and a lot of not much else to come from it. I don't even think they had a shot on goal until like the closing moments of the first half, but then come out and pour on four in the second and just walk away just unharmed. Hopefully we'll talk about the potential injury scare, but pretty unharmed from a Villa team that has really led them the whole season and now are barely hanging on to that fourth position in the table.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, all the revenge stuff was maybe even more centered around the Bentancur injury than the result itself last time we played Villa, right? There's a lot of chatter there. But I think we're the better team, and I think we hit a rough spell after the Chelsea game, as we talk about and you had just talked about, that Villa didn't hit, right? And I think if we don't hit that rough patch, we're pretty firmly in fourth, third, second place, who knows, right, at this point. But all that is to say, I think we're the much better team. I do agree, in the first half it was concerning to see the same stagnant approach in the final third that we've seen for a couple of months now, right? And as we talked about in the last show, as soon as our opponents start going for it a little bit is when we tend to find space. It's all quick transition, it's all counter, right? That's where we're really doing the business. And if we have aspirations to win a league title at some point, having the ball and possessing it well with some semblance of an attack is super important, right? So we'll have to get that figured out. But ultimately, I think the credit really goes to the team for, you know, like we talked about with Robert in the women's game, staying the course, right? We've seen, as I just said, for a couple months, as soon as those teams start to get forward, we start to find goals. And that usually happens 60, 65, 70, somewhere in there, if we're not scoring and the game's still tight. Happened a little bit earlier in this match. And maybe you got to talk about the failure on the part of Unai Emery for not recognizing what might happen if you don't approach Tottenham a specific way, right? But ultimately, again, the credit goes to the team for staying the course and staying patient and ultimately opening up those floodgates that led to a 4-0 win.
Yeah, it was not a good evening for Unai Emery, to say the least, Caroline. I do feel as if they sat back in like a back five for the first half and just kind of let Spurs play with the ball, didn't try to be too aggressive. Once that second half came out, they were pressing and trying to go after it, and Spurs just ripped them for it. Spurs just completely ripped them apart.
Yeah, I think it was kind of one of those situations in the first half where neither team wanted to make a mistake and were both not really playing up to their potential. But as Scott said, I think our potential is greater than theirs. So in the end, it went out. as it rightfully should. But it was, I think this game is going to be really important in the long run, not just because of the, you know, sort of table implications. We're now just 2 points behind Villa with that game in hand, and also fixed a bit of our goal difference as well, you know, that we were behind them in goal difference as well. So really good to see there. And, you know, I think again, our forwards have really been having kind of an underrated season compared to some of the other talents in the league, you know, especially Son. He just kind of always goes under the radar for putting up consistent numbers. And, and even a player like Brennan, you know, who's come in as a new player and I think was getting, in my opinion, too much criticism early on, because he is a young player. But I think he's just really been able to show in the last few games what he can do. And, you know, to see him do it from a starting role this time as opposed to a substitute role was also really good to see. It's this has been quite a day, you know. It's like it's an embarrassment of riches, and it's almost hard to focus on what was the best part.
I say it all the time. I feel like I've said it numerous times this season after a big win like this for Spurs. It's like, who was man of the match? I don't know. You could probably pick 5 or 6 different people and consider them for that. I do want to double click on Sonny for a second, though. You brought him up. 22 goal contributions, 14 goals and 8 assists in 24 league appearances this season. That is a remarkable tally. And I saw some people talking earlier this week. Apparently there's some contract talks going on with Sonny wanting to extend, which thumbs up from me. Sounds great. He's slotted into this captaincy just so brilliantly and has done such a great job. I'm all in favor of just making him a Spurs player for life. He's obviously been great, but somebody quoted the story about him potentially getting a contract extension and said that he wants to prove himself in the Premier League. And I'm like, wait a second, we're talking about a Golden Boot winner who captains South Korea, captains Spurs. Like, what the hell does this man have to prove anymore? Like, I get it's just a turn of phrase, but this guy doesn't have to prove anything. He is one of the best players in the world and consistently overlooked. And I mean, he now is the fifth all time in goals for Spurs, joint along with Cliff Jones, who sent a nice message on social media welcoming him. 159 goals for Spurs for Heung-min's son, Scott. Wow.
Incredible. I honestly think we back up to Andrew's presser for a second, right? I think it was yesterday where he came out and said, you know, all the wonderful things that the team had done this season. And one of the things he had mentioned was that we recovered so seamlessly from the departure of Harry Kane, who's not only our best ever player, but probably the best ever striker the league's ever seen, right? Thierry Henry probably has something to say about that. But if we're talking out and out number nines, we lost him and it was seamless. And all that to say, I think Heung-min Son is the specific reason for that happening. And you point to Ange, you point to many factors, right? But Sonny is the type of guy, I've talked about it before, when we were at a dark point as a club, just post Mourinho, the Conte shit show was starting to rev up. Sonny signs a long-term deal, right? When everybody else wanted out, including Harry Kane. Hate to bring it up again, you know, I love to at the same time, but Kane wanted to go to Germany and Sonny wanted to sign a new deal at Tottenham Hotspur Football Club, right? We've seen Sonny from the lens of the captaincy for South Korea. He's a leader, right? He's loved. You hear about the fact that he fits into every group within the locker room, right? All the cliques, whatever you want to call it. Sonny's a part of each and every single group. But he also knows when it's time to physically fight your teammate during a game of ping pong because their head's not in it or whatever the report was and wind up with a broken finger, right? He's a strong leader and a firm leader when he needs to be too. And so, again, all of this long-winded bit to say, when Kane leaves, you've got a guy like Sonny who steps in and says, first of all, I want to be here, and you all know that, right? I'll put this club on my back. And frankly, this is not what Sonny said. This is how I would translate it, right? But I'm sure he said something along the lines of, like, who fucking cares? Harry Kane can go wherever he wants to, like, let's go, right? Get on my back and let's run. Again, that's my version of what he probably said, but I just think we're so lucky to have him not only at our club, but as our captain. And it's evident in everything good that's happening at the club right now, in my opinion.
I think the leadership too that he's shown is just it's remarkable. He gets fired up and fires his teammates up when it's needed, but he also shows a calm presence and just a general calmness when it's, you know, things appear to be getting off the rails and appear to be going a little bit south. He just reassures people that, no, we're going to stay the course. We're going to, you know, continue on, continue to get better, continue to grow as a club. And I think that is just a really underrated and important part of what has been just a brilliant start to his captaincy at the club. Caroline, you brought up Brennan Johnson as well. I thought, you know, that was one of the big, I think, things we noticed from the starting 11 was that Brennan was starting on the left instead of Timo Werner. There was a little bit of word that Timo might have had a knock, but did come on and scored a second goal. We'll talk about him as well. But I thought Brennan was so good in this game in terms of the space that he created, which is not always something that we've seen. But not only that, he was really good on the ball, even better than I've seen him on the ball in recent weeks, and gets a goal as well. You brought it up, Caroline. Like, Brennan Johnson took a lot of heat from so many people in the early days at Spurs, and all of a sudden he's proving to be a part of this attack that, when you get the contributions that he's producing, when you get Son, when you get Madison's contributions, really, we've talked a lot about the attacking options, but he's proven to be one that is pretty steady at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I don't say this to dig out Kulusevski, but I believe he now has more goal contributions than Deki does on the season. So I think it's all about kind of perception with our fan base. You know, when things are kind of going through a rough period, it's easy to single out certain players and feel like they're not contributing enough. But I think if you actually look at the season as a whole, he's actually been pretty important. And I think you're right, Andrew, that we saw some really great sort of technical skill from him in this match. And that's really all you can ask for, is that the players are continuing to develop. And I think, you know, they are doing that under Ange. You know, you also look at, you know, to move back to the midfield, a young player like Pap Sarr, who pretty much dominated this game. And he, you know, he's actually younger than Brennan is, in fact. So just, This is a young team, and there will be times in the season where we have to be a little patient with them because they are learning and growing. But, you know, a game like this, you really can't find too much fault with any of them.
Yeah, no question about it. Kevin chimes in on the YouTube page, says Johnson was so much more confident today and looked like a big money signing. Also the first guy in there after the red card foul on Destiny. That was actually the other moment from Brennan that I noticed, and shout out to you, Kevin, for pointing it out. Like, he jumped right in on John McGinn and was like, no, we're not having that today. And he was right, ready to mix it up. And I'm glad that that whole scenario and that whole situation didn't escalate any further than it needed to. I want to pause here and talk about the red card, because I mentioned Matty Cash earlier and what happened back in, I think it was November, on Bentancur. And it does seem like Aston Villa, like, they really are living up to the name villains, at least in the eyes of a lot of Spurs fans to this point, Scott. And we did get a tweet from Andy Nash, and he said, how many matches in a row against Villa are going to let them blatantly play to hurt our players? At what point does this become a heated rivalry? And when do we put the hurt on them in return? I'm really starting to hate Villa as much as Chelsea. I will say, late in the match, there was a scenario where Bentancur did get one in on Matty Cash, and it was just called a simple foul, no booking. Like, he did it in a pretty sneaky way, right? Late in the match, it was like, you know, it's already 4-0. I'm going to give you one, and we're going to walk away from it. I don't really like to escalate these things. And I'm glad that the red card foul wasn't escalated more than it needed to be. If teams are going to go out there and start kicking our players, we're just going to need to accept that and walk away from it and continue to play football in my eyes. What was your outlook on how all of that was approached, Scotty?
Yeah, I mean, I don't, you know, hold any contempt towards Aston Villa. I think their approach is a physical one, and it's a valid and effective approach in the sport of football, which is a very physical game, you know, contrary to maybe popular belief in the United States, and none of our listeners included, right? Just as a blanket. But I really think that their approach is just to be very physical and to put bodies on their opponents. The more physical your opponent, the more you think when the ball's at your feet, right? Not necessarily fear, but just what do I need to do to be prepared for the physicality that's coming, whatever it is. So it's their approach. And like you, I choose to say that we should always not buy into it, right? A team like that wants you to start to reciprocate and buy into that approach. We saw it against Brentford. It did not go well for us, right? Albeit the result we got. So yeah, I would say Ange is the type of manager that would very much be saying, don't get sucked into that crap. That's not our game, right? Just continue to play our football. So I think it'll probably continue. And I'll also tell you, Aston Villa does that against everybody. It's not just against Spurs. I don't see it becoming some big rivalry. It's just, again, the way they play football anytime they take the pitch. Yeah.
I mean, I think the rivalry is more so just with Matty Cash as an individual at this point. Although John McGinn was, you know, trying to get in on the action today. So it is what it is. But we were talking last episode about the question of, are we ready for the Champions League? And I look at a team like Aston Villa and they are not ready for the Champions League in any way, shape or form. You know, I don't want to be like rude in case there are any Villa fans listening to this by some chance, but I just think some of this kind of physical approach, I think, is left over from when Steven Gerrard was in charge. Cause I mean, that was like blatantly their tactic, was to out physical their opponents. But I don't think it's a long-term strategy by any means if they want to actually be competitive in Europe, you know, at the top level of the Premier League year after year. Like, this is a kind of approach that could easily see them slipping back down the table next year if they, you know, don't have a good transfer window, for example. So yeah, I think it doesn't need to be a rivalry, because I don't think they're necessarily heading in the same trajectory that we are.
I thought the most beautiful part was we saw those quotes come out from John McGinn before the game, talking about how important this match was. You know, in terms of a league fixture, it's probably the most important game in the club's recent history. Players are aware of that. Maybe it was the other players that were aware of that, and not him for doing something like that and that kick on Adogie. You bring up Europe too, Caroline. It is important to note that Villa are in Europe. They were playing in the Conference League, and they played just this past Thursday against Ajax, played to a 0-0 draw, two red cards, one for each team in that match. So a very draining match for them. And I thought, you know, in Ange's post-match press conference, he did bring up the fact that he thought he saw some tiring out of Villa just at the end of the first half. And maybe Spurs had that mindset to, okay, if they're going to sit back and play defensively and play in a back five, we'll kick it about, you know, not that Spurs weren't going to try and score on them, but he saw them tiring. And then in the second half, Spurs just went after it and knew this was going to be a team playing on some tired legs, having just played on Thursday. So, you know, take advantage of that. You have to take advantage of every little thing that's given to you when you're playing Premier League football. And I thought that was just a really important thing to note too. And as you talk about in this race for fourth place, which is definitely going to be good for Champions League, and fifth place, which might, this was a really important game. I just think John McGinn didn't really listen to his own message to his fellow teammates and, you know, decided to take out his frustration on Destiny Adogie's shin. And of course the match was already 2-0 at that point. But Spurs were in control, but that just made the rest of the match, I think, more comfortable for Spurs, which I think is another advantage that can play for them going forward. You brought up the midfield too, Caroline, and Pap Sarr. I do want to double click on him. I really thought everybody in the midfield played fairly well. Basuma had a few ugly giveaways early on, but just the return of kind of, this was the return for me of kind of a full 11 for Spurs, with Porro coming back. The back line looked good. But then, of course, because we're Spurs fans, we can't have anything completely nice, because, of course, Mickey van de Ven early in the second half does go off with an injury. And this is where we go to the Radu Dragushin portion of the show, where I want to tip my cap to that guy, because despite a kind of foolish yellow card for delay of game and sticking a leg out on a free kick, I thought Radu Dragushin came into a pretty volatile situation and had to, for a guy who hasn't had a lot of minutes and has only kind of played in garbage time, and there's been a lot of conversation about, you know, when's he going to get his moment. The Mickey Van de Ven injury did provide that moment for Dragushin, Scott, and I thought he performed really, really well.
Yeah, he was great. He was great. I think so much credit goes to him from a mentality perspective, you know, to first of all bypass the move to Bayern in favor of Spurs, and now you're seeing Dyer start every match with De Ligt, right? And you have to start to think, if you're Dragushin, what would have been if I would have gone to Bayern at this point, right? Would I be getting more minutes for a bigger club in the Champions League, etc.? But he stayed super focused and super prepared, and he was ready when his moment came. And I think that's something that we don't see enough of in the game anymore, right? Players who are willing to sit and be patient and work hard and take their chance when it comes. And he certainly did that. I don't think he's usurping Van de Ven from his performance today. I don't think anyone in the league probably gets in a center back pairing over Van de Ven, but Dragushin certainly showed the manager that he's going to be very effective and very good when he's called upon. And I think from the perspective of the club, having three very talented, highly functioning center backs is a really positive thing. I would actually maybe call it a hot shout. I think Romero gets a breather in favor of Dragushin, maybe in the near future, if Van de Ven doesn't turn up injured, right? That guy's played a lot of minutes too. Van de Ven spent time out where Romero, you know, just those three red card bands, I think, is all that he's missed from a minutes perspective. But yeah, credit to Dragushin for a wonderful job today.
And Caroline, I think that, you know, in terms of this being a six pointer, like, this was, you brought it up earlier, like, where we are in the table now, this is, I laughed at the John McGinn thing, talking about like how important this game is. I think Spurs fans and Spurs players know how important this game was too, but they didn't treat it like the end all be all. And that calmness for me, in a similar way to what we've seen from Romero, Dragushin, Van de Ven at times, like, it's the calmness that they showed in this match, to me, I think, was the biggest thing. And Ange brought it up, like, he wants to see more goals out of four different players, and to get those goals, like, he thought it was really important to see goals from those types of players. And anytime you can score four goals, you're gonna have a good chance to win, obviously, but it's getting four goals from those specific players and kind of just showing the poise and confidence that Spurs did when, in a first half that was kind of frustrating for having a lot of the ball but not a lot of, let's just say, XG to piss Scott off. Like, there was not a lot going on for Spurs in the first half, but it came out in the second half and just showed that poise to get 3 points and walk away with, you know, hopefully minimal damage. We did get word about Van de Ven. Ange said he doesn't think it's anything serious, but we'll see in the coming days what some scans reveal.
Yeah, I think it's poise, and it's also just having the patience to kind of ride out that first half that was very, you know, kind of tense and tentative from both teams, I would say. But you really saw in the second half, we were able to show our quality. Just seeing us actually being a little bit braver in the final third in terms of, like, making those passes in tight spaces, the through balls. We were just seeing, like, a different dimension to what we saw in the first half. So I think it's also that they're just prepared. Like, Ange has them ready for different scenarios, and we were able to kind of take advantage in this lull for Aston Villa and really just hit them. And, you know, having those kind of quick fire goals just kind of sucks all the, you know, the air out of the stadium. And then also just the opponents, you know, they don't really always know how to respond to that. So especially when they know that we have the potential to just keep scoring and scoring and scoring with a front line like we have. Like, it really is one of the best in the league, I would say, when they're really in form. So yeah, I think it was a very mature performance in the end, especially considering that we do have some younger players. I mean, I know our captain is not the youngest anymore, but a lot of those players who are around him are, you know, just hitting their peak or not even there yet. So that's really exciting.
Hey, I think we got to go out, give a lot of credit to Ange here. And of course, we're always going to give credit to Ange at this point, but their approach was perfect. I think Villa sitting back and looking to absorb pressure and counter was not at all centered around them being tired from Thursday. I think it was Emery looking at Spurs the past couple of months and saying, this is how you beat Spurs, right? But Ange, you know, kept his poker face and said, all right, mate, I'm just going to keep bringing the ball at you. And eventually, unless you want to sit in back and take a draw, you're going to go for it. And when you do, Johnson will be ready, right? I think Johnson starts that match because Ange expects Aston Villa to have as high of a line as we do, like they always do, right? They really, really play aggressive football just as we do. I think that's why Johnson starts. We've talked about it on the show a couple of times at this point. Johnson is very ineffective against a low block. Nothing to do with him. It's the type of player that he is. Very effective in quick transitions and counters. If you can find space behind a back line, there might not be anyone better suited in the league to getting behind the line and being effective when they're able to do that, right? So I think that's why he started. I think Andrew was probably, again, thrown off when he saw how they were set up, but he stayed the course like he always does. He knew that his team would have opportunities to get behind the line. Eventually we did. And if you know, you could really say that it was an Ange Unai Emery game of poker today, and Ange stayed tough and got the result.
You raise a good point, Scotty. I mean, historically, over even not just this season, but over the last few seasons, when teams come out and play against Spurs, they're going to have an opportunity to get in behind. We see it, you know, I think that's why Spurs have had so much success against, relative success against teams like Manchester City or Liverpool at times. Like, you know, teams that want to come play, Spurs will come play. But if you're going to sit in a low block, it's going to be a lot tougher for Spurs to break you down. Look at what happened against Wolves twice this season, just as an example. So a team that wants to come play, Spurs will, you know, have a good run at it. But I also think that speaks to the job that players like Romero and Van de Ven, and even in this game, Dragosin, are able to do in stopping those counterattacks. I mean, before Van de Ven went off in this match, I thought he was once again in the running for a man of the match performance, like he has been pretty much every game he's played, because he's stopping these counterattacks with his pace and with his poise and calmness in terms of getting position in front of an attacker, getting the ball out of play or just recycling it back to the keeper, whatever he has to do to get the job done, he's been doing it. So that's been another big part of this as well.
Yeah, I think Mickey sometimes gets reduced down to just his pace, but he actually is a very versatile defender. Like, he has a lot of tricks in his locker. And we were really seeing kind of the breadth of that skill set in this first half before he went off injured. And I totally agree. I think he was in the running for man of the match at that point when he went off. But that speaks to the mentality Scott was talking about for Dragosin to be able to come in and not be daunted by the level that he had to get up to, you know, to kind of match that. And I mean, I think it would be a little too nice to say that he fully matched Mickey's level, but, you know, he certainly did a solid job, and I think made an argument for some more minutes, you know, because we do have to rotate at times. I think we're probably going to be coming up to a situation soon where we do have to have those midweek matches, because we've still got the Chelsea game to reschedule, and I felt like there was a possibility of one more, but I might be confusing that with the women's team. But yeah, we're going to have to think about, you know, some creative solutions to keep everybody fresh. And it's good that we finally have a high quality center back to be able to bring in, you know, not just for rotation, but also if, for example, Mickey was out for an extended period of time again, which hopefully he's not.
This Tottenham defense is the first to keep a clean sheet at Villa Park in Premier League play since Unai Emery was appointed, which is really saying something. It was a hell of a performance. I get that they played a good bit of the second half a man up, but that was created by their pressure. That, like, that was one of those red cards that was created out of the frustration. So I'm not even going to take that away from them. It was really, really big and really, really important. Up next for Spurs, it is a match against Fulham, which is, you know, never easy. I know Fulham are Fulham, but Fulham is, you know, that's what comes next. And it's a trip to Craven Cottage on Saturday. They won the previous meeting in October 2-0. Fulham sit 12th. They lost at Wolves this weekend. So an opportunity to pick up some more points. And Caroline, you brought it up. Like, when you kind of match run-ins, Spurs against Villa, I do think Spurs have the upper hand, not only because of the game in hand, but when you just look at some of these matchups, there is a really good opportunity for Spurs to at least solidify fourth if they can just continue on this path. Now, 11 games left. That's a long path to continue on over the course of a Premier League season. It is still only March, still a lot of games left, but this is a good sign, and this was a really, really important victory as a part of that. Anything else on the game before we move on to the topic of season tickets, which we need to talk about before we wrap up the podcast this week? What else do you guys have on the game itself?
Yeah, the only other thing I would point out is just how good of a goal the first goal was. It was in transition, somewhat pseudo transition, we'll say, but the ball from Sarr is a winger's ball, and the finish from Madison is a striker's finish, and neither of them are a winger or a striker, right? They stepped up big, especially against a block like that. The only way you can beat a low block, and this is what we need to see more of, is secondary runs from the midfield. Strikers and wingers are pretty much null and void in that situation. But Madison's run was beautiful. Again, they weren't quite in the low block. It was a pseudo transition, we'll say again. But the run from Madison was certainly a late secondary run. He saw the space. He had the vision, we could say. And then again, the ball from Sarr it's a very difficult ball to play. To put it right on a penny like he did for Madison. I think, you know, we can talk all day long about Sarr and his ability to put crosses in will never come up, right? That's not what we think of when we think of Pop Sarr, but that ball was just, that's honestly one of the best crosses I've seen all season.
I never complain about having David Bowie songs stuck in my head, but I've been singing like Sarr Man in my head all morning after watching that performance. It was incredible. And he's been a revelation, honestly. And the fact that he is going to eventually, you know, when he ages a little bit more, be a homegrown player for us is, I still have to pinch myself every time, because he has been, he's just been a joy to watch. So thank you for double clicking on Pap Sarr. He's been one of my favorite players to watch for Spurs in recent memory. And it hasn't even been that long. So it's really cool to see. Guys, let's talk season tickets, because this is something else that came up this week. Spurs are increasing their season ticket prices by 6% for next season. And I want to preface this conversation a little bit, because we have, you know, the three of us are Americans. We have an international audience. And I just want to recognize that the three of us as Americans are not impacted by season ticket prices for Tottenham Hotspur going up. So we're going to be talking a little bit, not out of our ass here, but we're going to try and empathize while also recognizing that this is not something that affects us in the way that it does many of our listeners. So I just want to like state that at the start of this, because we're probably going to say a few things that sound a little, at least I know I'm going to, that sound a little dismissive. And I don't mean to be, because costs are going up everywhere throughout the world. That's, I think, the reasoning for Spurs doing this. But this has caused a lot of consternation on the good old internet, and rightfully so. Spurs fans are pissed about this. Concession prices for seniors are also, there's a thing there that's going to be going away. Like, there's a lot of tentacles to this. I just want to start by saying, and this is kind of where I'm going to bring the real Americanism into it. Ticket prices internationally, like for Spurs matches or anywhere else, are still way, way lower than they are in a lot of places. And that's not to say that is an excuse to raise them, but it's just something I want to point out, because I don't think a lot of people even realize that buying season tickets to go see Spurs, even though it's one of the more expensive tickets in England or even probably in Europe, is still a really affordable thing when you look at it from an American's perspective. Now, I'm going to remove that now because I'm just saying that for posterity, because I know our American listeners will look at the prices to go see a Spurs match. And when you take out obviously travel and boarding and all of that kind of thing, when you just look at a match day ticket, fans will look and say, that's not actually that expensive compared to what the price types of prices we see, whether it be for NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, any of the big sports over here. But that said, this is still an issue because Spurs have, you know, they I know they increased the single game tickets for this season, but not the season tickets. Now they're increasing season tickets, and this is going to price a lot of people out. And I think that this is one of those things that, again, it comes with the territory with new stadium, you know, just increased match day costs, trying to raise funds. But Spurs, in terms of profit versus spending, are still one of the top teams. They are still raking in match day funds every time a game is held at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. In addition to NFL, concerts, F1, you know, go-kart tracks, Spurs experiences like, you know, stadium tours and, you know, the Skywalk, all of those things. So I guess I don't really know. I don't really have a side of the fence I sit on here. I empathize, but I also realize that this is just, for lack of a better word, capitalism running amok. And this is a team that's making a lot of money, trying to make a lot more money. Where else can we go with this conversation other than that? What do you guys have on season tickets going up?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, I think it is really hard for us to talk about this in any meaningful way because of everything you've already said, right? I for context, I have paid much more money to go watch Dynamo play, and I would do it again, but it's ingrained in us as American fans. I also think, to your point about the travel, I don't want to say like a step further, but to add a further point, if I'm traveling to London, which I have before, right, and I'm going to Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, I'm already paying $1,000 in flights, probably $600, $700 in hotel rooms. So to pay another like $10 for a match day ticket compared to what it was last year, like, is absolutely nothing to me. And I'm going to just pay it and not think twice about it. All that being said, I think it's a cultural thing in England, and I'm not English, right? I don't have a pulse on the culture as an expert by any means, but I do know that this is a sport that historically was a very blue collar sport. It's now become a white collar sport. I think that's hard for a lot of people to swallow. I think that's why you see so much outrage around the senior pricing, is a lot of these seniors grew up when football was very, very much blue collar, and were going to Spurs when it was very blue collar and tickets were cheap. And it was no more than just, you know, a couple quid to go have a few pints with your friends and go watch Spurs play. So it's just a different game. You know, as you've kind of already said, Andrew, it's a different time. It's a different game. We're in the world of financial fair play, where dollars do count, dollars do matter. You know, Eric Dyer said things that I have wanted to say to fans for a long time too, right? It seems very, and this isn't about Levy, right? We're going a bit off topic here, but it seems silly at times to criticize Tottenham Hotspur for the board, for the stewards that they've been for the club. You hear it from one of our longest serving players. I think this kind of goes into it because we know we'll never have to worry about financial fair play. And again, that should never be on the backs of the fans. And I'm not here saying like we should pay more so we don't have to worry about financial fair play. But what I'm saying is there's strategic decision-making behind everything that happens at the club from an economical standpoint. But I will add the caveat. I am very much on the side of do not charge seniors more. And not because I don't think that someone over a certain age should have to pay more or anything like that. I just think from a PR standpoint, regardless of opinion, it's obviously not a good look in the United Kingdom. And I think that Spurs have done a pretty terrible job with PR over the past decade. And I think it would just be doing themselves a favor if they rolled back on that senior increase for sure.
Yeah, I honestly think that the senior concessions, as they call it, is really the big sticking point for a lot of people. And part of it is just that you never like being surprised by, you know, a sudden increase in costs. And, you know, I feel like we can still consider this sudden because they do only have so much time to decide if they want to renew their season ticket or not. But even to bring it back to American sports, like, this is something that's happened at my local club, the Kansas City Current, suddenly increasing parking costs. Like, it doesn't necessarily have to just be a season ticket. Like, it's any sort of part of the match day experience having a sudden increase. It just doesn't feel good, you know? And I think sort of the slogan that fans are using to kind of bring up these issues is don't exploit loyalty. And I think that's also where it's an emotional thing, because you feel like you, for many people, you know, especially the seniors, they've put many, many years into supporting the club, and it's not a great feeling to feel like that's not been appreciated or recognized. But, you know, to play devil's advocate, I do think it is super important that we are a club that is not beholden to an oil state for our funding, and that we do have such a healthy financial position that we're not worrying about financial fair play deductions or anything like that, like a lot of the other teams in the league are right now. I'm not necessarily saying that we have to just accept, you know, these changes like they're nothing, but I do think it's worth thinking about, you know, what is it worth it to us to have, you know, that a little bit more independence compared to other clubs. And obviously that's something that only, you know, individual season ticket holders can decide on their own. Like, some are going to decide to keep their ticket, some won't. And I don't think there's a right or wrong to it necessarily. But it's, I think the one thing that I always wonder about is, do I only hear complaints about Tottenham because they're the only club doing it, or is this happening at other clubs and we just don't see the protest because we're not in those kind of circles? And I honestly don't know, you know, maybe other clubs aren't raising their prices. I think it's a situation that many other clubs are going to find themselves in, you know, in the near future, if not next season.
I'll add this as delicately as possible, but there is a large sect of the fan base that is very happy to pounce on an opportunity to get mad at the board and at Levy, right? They're just waiting for any opportunity to do so, and this is a big glaring opportunity to do so. Again, I say that delicately. I say even more delicately, the trust was in that group of people very recently who were happy to complain and go after Levy and the board, right? And so I think, and I'll also add, we saw two very important ex-trust members come out and have something to say about that. So I think when you start to see the trust falling on maybe the, dare I say, the wrong side of that fence when it comes to choosing when to criticize and when not to criticize, it kind of waters down something like this in a bit of a way too. And that's not great. So it's added fuel to the fire, we could say.
Well, and, you know, to your point about the trust, I mean, a lot of what has gone on with the trust has kind of pulled away a little bit from, and this comes from The Athletic, from negotiating and dealing with the club as much on a regular basis. We did see word after the season ticket announcement that the club was kind of planning, and I don't know exactly if this was the trust or the trust along with a group that comes up with the TIFO idea, but the TIFO that was scheduled for the Manchester City match in a few weeks is no longer going to happen because as a result of this decision. Scott, I appreciate what you're saying, and I appreciate that you're trying to say it delicately. I'm going to be a little less delicate, if you will, about this. Some fans, and I emphasize some fans, I think have this idea that Tottenham Hotspur is not a global entity and is not a global brand. Daniel Levy has made massive, massive efforts to make Tottenham Hotspur a global entity and a global brand. Think about, you know, just the reach out that they do, not only in Asia, and obviously there's a really important reason for that, and that's the club captain, but they're going back to Asia this summer for, I think, the third time in the last 4 or 5 years for a summer tour, to reach out to folks there, to let folks in Asia have a touch. I think that's a really important thing that the club does in order to bring more people into the club that aren't based in not only Europe, but England specifically. They were over here in the United States for a tour a few years ago. I think that's a really important thing. I would love to see them do that again in the near future so that folks here in the States can get to, you know, a preseason friendly. I think that's a really important market to discover and explore. They've obviously really dove into the United States market just with the connection with the NFL. And that's a really important thing for the club as well, to have all of the money from a deal with the NFL coming in. I think the global outreach of the club is dismissed a lot of times from folks in England who grew up with it or think that this is just a local thing. And it is a local thing. It's important. I'm not dismissing that myself. It is important for Spurs to be local and be in the community and be a North London entity, but it is also a very global entity. And I think that what we see a lot with some of the fans who complain about ticket price increases is they don't think anyone else should be able to come to games because this is a North London thing. And I think that's wrong as well. I think that folks need to recognize that Spurs as a, you know, just when you think of, I mean, let's look at the reason that the club is still playing in Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, because when that is said out loud a number of times, people think, what is Tottenham Hotspur? People who don't know, they think, oh, Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, that's where the NFL games are played. What is Tottenham Hotspur? And then they look into it and they think, oh, that just brings more brand awareness and those kinds of things. And I don't know. It stresses me out to a point when I hear and see a lot of the, frankly, racism that happens when I see fans that obviously are not English in the stadium. It's disheartening to me. And I think this is a small but important part of this whole conversation.
Well, speaking of the stadium, right, bring it back to the micro of the stadium. Look at that stadium behind us in the background. That is not the stadium of a non-international brand. There's no way around it, right? And there's people that would rebuttal me and say, well, give me White Hart Lane back, I'd take it back in a heartbeat. Fine. You're selling half the amount of tickets you're selling every single match, literally half. And you're not signing Brennan Johnson for $60 million. And you're not signing James Madison for $40 million. You can't have everything you want, right? If you want us to spend and spend and spend and levy out and all of this, give me White Hart Lane back. It doesn't work like that, right? And that, I think I sense your frustration, and I feel it at times as well, because I think often Spurs fans have a hard time recognizing that, again, you can't have everything you want all the time. If we want to grow with the clubs around us and stay within the financial laws of the game, we do it exactly how we're doing it right now. And again, asterisk, please don't exploit loyalty to seniors in the process of doing that, right? I'm not saying that you need to just drive ticket prices and screw your fans over to stay within financial fair play. But my point is, again, I'll say it for the fourth time, you just can't have everything you want all the time in the modern game.
The last thing I would add, I saw what I will say is an interesting take on this issue from, his name is Michael Cox. People might know him as the author of the Zonal Marking book. I'm taking it that he's not a Spurs fan, because it sounds like he's approaching this from sort of an outsider perspective. But he said, and I'll just read it out, "I realize this is part of a wider justified anger about ticket prices, but the idea that 66-year-olds should be entitled to a concessionary rate while 22-year-olds pay full whack is quite obviously outdated. And the opposite of what should be happening in this day and age." Now, I'm not going to make a value judgment about, you know, that statement. Like, I don't necessarily agree with it, but I do think he had kind of an interesting conversation in his replies to this tweet, where, you know, people were coming at it from both sides, and you've got young people who are feeling, you know, really squeezed financially, like unable to necessarily get on the property ladder, as they call it, you know, all sorts of vectors. And, you know, there will definitely be seniors who have their financial issues too, but many of them are, you know, maybe they've paid off their mortgage and they actually have a lot more disposable income than they've had in the past. So it's going to be a different situation for every individual. But I did think one sort of solution that he proposed that was interesting to me was the idea that if Tottenham want to sort of make up this shortfall that they're feeling from the rising cost, they could extend the age that fans are able to get the junior concessions, and then raise the age until which point seniors are able to get those senior concessions. So then you still have, you know, a wider group of people who are paying the normal prices, and that could kind of alleviate it without it having to necessarily end up being like a generational war kind of thing. But I also think, to speak to your point earlier, Andrew, about, you know, some of the racism that we've seen towards fans who are, you know, perhaps traveling from South Korea. I think it's really important to talk about it, because I think the fact that with, you know, each successive generation of Tottenham fans, our fan base is becoming more diverse, I think that's a thing to celebrate and to, you know, to encourage. And it is tough if you have a generation of fans who are, this is where I may actually stick my foot in it, so I should be careful, but I do think you get to a point where some fans have had these season tickets for so long and the wait list is insane. Like, people can't get in. And at some point, maybe you need to say, like, I've enjoyed this team for so many years. Other people should get a chance to enjoy it too. I don't know. That's probably a controversial thing to say, but
it's not.
I think it's nice to see a variety of people at the stadium is all I'm going to say.
I don't think it's wrong or unfair to say that at all. And I'll go back to the point that Andrew made. This is capitalisming, right? If there's 70,000 available tickets and 500,000 people want one of those, whoever pays the most is going to get in, right? That is just how it works. And so to bypass or look past the fact that people who are coming from other countries are very happy to pay whatever price is listed for the ticket, and you're complaining about the ticket price and the fact that you didn't get to go, it just doesn't match up and marry up. And again, that's a very blanketed statement that should really only be targeted at a very select few people, right? I don't mean to be critical, but I think what you said is very fair, right? We simply put, you want the ticket, pay for it. And that's kind of the world that we live in the modern game, whether it's right or wrong.
Well, and I will say too, we as Americans have a really good deal in terms of being able to, we can watch, now we pay for it, but we can watch every single match that we want to on television. Fans in England can't even do that. So there is a fortune that we have as international fans to be able to, yeah, we're going to pay for our streaming services, Peacock and ESPN Plus and gosh, where else are Paramount Plus, you know, when you get to the Champions League, which Spurs hopefully will be in next year. Same with, you know, on the women's side, some of their games are on Paramount Plus now as well. Like, it's games are everywhere, strewn across all of these streaming platforms. But we at least in the States, and I don't know how exactly it is in every other country, but internationally, fans have more access to be able to pay for and watch all of the games that is not accessible in England due to blackout rules. And that's why, you know, season tickets are at so much more of a premium there and everything else. But to your point, Scott, it is. It's supply and demand. It's capitalism. It's all of these, you know, Econ 101 buzzwords that we want to throw out that is causing this. But it's also, there is a sliver of it that's greed. And there is a sliver of it that is from this club trying to rake in as much of the money as it can. We just also want to see it turned out and given back to the club as well. And I think we're starting to see some of that. We're starting to see some of the benefit of, on the pitch, money being spent and money being invested, and money's been obviously invested into a beautiful stadium that fans can go enjoy. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of moving parts for all of this. And again, I think we've handled this conversation okay as three Americans who it does not fully touch. I would like to hear from some of our English listeners and how this impacts them. Please reach out to us on social media at Tottenham Depot, wherever, Twitter, Blue Sky, Threads, TikTok, Instagram, all the places. I want to hear about how this affects folks, because it does impact all of us as Spurs fans and just as soccer fans in general. But this is the product of something growing and growing and growing. And when it grows that big, everything grows big, including price. So I think we handled this okay, guys. I want to be sympathetic and empathetic to, you know, to the plight of those who are going through this on the ground, while also saying this is the world we live in. Everything's going up, prices are going up, and it does suck for a lot of people, but this is how things grow. They continually grow and grow and grow until they can no longer grow. And I think Spurs as a brand and as a club and as an entity still have a lot of room to grow if they want to. So this is something that they should be prepared for. Caroline, you point out to me too. Yes, you can also leave us a voicemail on the pod if you want to, and we can play it on the pod in future episodes. Reach out to us. We want to know how this is impacting all of you. Guys, I think that's going to do it, unless there's anything else for our first live podcast that we've been streaming here on YouTube. Thanks to those of you who have chimed in the comments, including two of our own, Todd and Dakota, I know have been jumping in the comments as well. We are going to be back with you guys next week following a couple of more matches for both the men's and women's teams. You can follow Scott at Scott G Bird. You can follow Caroline at CG Stefko, and you can follow me at A Stetka. More importantly, follow us at Tottenham Depot, wherever you get your podcasts. So subscribe to the YouTube. If you didn't, you know, watch the YouTube, that's fine. If you just like the audio medium, that's fine. But go subscribe to the YouTube. Spread the word that we are putting some content out on there as well. It just helps get the word out about the podcast. Leave us a rating and review in your podcast app of choice as well. Until next week, this has been the Tottenham Depot podcast. As always, come on you Spurs.
I thought it was as controlled as we've been in any game all year, and just in the way we handled everything. And it's a positive for us, because again, you know, we know there's still a lot of growth in this team, and that's one of the areas where, you know, can we control games even against quality opponents.